Welcome to this session on Azure SQL Data Warehouse, and in this session we're going to focus on the key concepts. My name is Chris Tess O'Neill. I work as a features engineer in the data science team at Microsoft. Let's start off by looking at the agenda. So we'll start off by looking at Azure SQL Data Warehouse in the context of the Cortana Intelligence Suite. We'll introduce what SQL Data Warehouse is. We'll need to focus on target workloads, so what this is for and what it's not for. We'll talk about scaling up versus scaling out and how we can scale the compute in Azure SQL Data Warehouse. And we'll finish off by looking at pause and resume. So, Azure SQL Data Warehouse in the context of the Cortana Intelligence Suite. Firstly, the Cortana Intelligence Suite is a platform and the process to perform advanced analytics from start to finish. So when you talk about the Cortana Intelligence Suite, you'll probably think about the marketing slide that we have with a plethora of technologies, and it can seem quite overwhelming. Well, here in the analytics and data science team, we also think about the process a lot as much as we think about the technologies. But between the team data science process and the Cortana Intelligence Suite, we're enable you to fulfill the platform and the process of advanced analytics from beginning to end. So from a process perspective, we do talk about the team data science process. This starts off with getting a business understanding where you're defining the business objectives. Here you may be identifying data sources. Fundamentally, you're trying to refine the questions that you're actually trying to answer. And once you get through that phase, then you've got the data acquisition and understanding. And this is where you'll use technologies to ingest data, explore data, you might update information about that data itself, and fundamentally you'll want to find places to store it. Modeling deals with the feature selection. Features in this context, it could be a column from a table, it could be an attribute from a cube, it might be a variable within our data set. We're going to wrap these up into the term feature. Essentially, features is data that is of interest to a machine learning model. So fundamentally, there's two really important parts. You've got the model itself that deals with the algorithm, and then you've got the features, which is the data going in. And from this, we create and train the model. We score it, we evaluate it, and if all is well, we can go to deployment and operationalize it. Finally, we've got customer acceptance, where we've got testing and validation. Sometimes the validation may yield results where you have to go back to the process. Maybe the model wasn't right, so you go to modeling and change the algorithm. Maybe the features that you selected were overfitted, so basically it provided a bias in the results, so you might want to change the features, in which case you may go back to the data acquisition phase. The key thing with the team data science process is that it's an iterative process until you get that customer acceptance and handoff. And even then, once that's been accepted, you may come back and review it down the line through retraining and rescoring newer data sets against the models that you have. So we have a platform that can accommodate this process through the Cortana Intelligence platform. A good friend and colleague of mine, Buck Woody, has done a video about an overview of the Cortana Intelligence Suite. I do encourage you to watch that 15-20 minute video. What we're focusing on in the Cortana Intelligence Suite today is SQL Data Warehouse. So this is the first of a series of videos that are going to explore many different aspects of SQL Data Warehouse, but in this video today we're looking at the key concepts that you need to get your head around. So in the context of the marketing slide, the previous slide may have looked like a raft of technologies and oh my god, that's overwhelming. I would ask you to stop and consider this. If you're a SQL Server professional, do you truly know all the technologies in SQL Server as an expert? Reporting services, analysis services, integration services, the database engine, replication, full text search, the full T-SQL language, not forgetting all the other languages across the board ranging from XMLA or DMX or MDX or so forth. I could go on. the reality is that there's very few people who are true experts of the full SQL Server stack. And it's going to be the same with the Cortana Intelligence Suite. You may specialize in an area of the Cortana Intelligence Suite and become a real expert in that area, but essentially be aware of the other areas. So rather than be overwhelmed, I break it down into these four parts. On the left-hand side, we deal with information management. So we've got Data Factory for the batch movement of time-based data. We've got Event Hubs that deals with the ingestion of real-time data. So here we can deal with time slicing in real time. And then we've got Data Catalog that deals with the documentation, tagging of your data sources or data store. So it doesn't have to be a source, it could be a destination. It could even be an intermediate storage area like an Azure Blob Store. So with information management, you're dealing with that ingestion of data and documentation of data. But at some point, you're going to have to store that data somewhere. And this is where we move on to the second phase, which is big data stores. So a lot of people in the BI space will be familiar with a data warehouse. And what these series of videos will do will help you become very familiar with Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So this deals with relational structured data stores. And with Data Lake Store, here we're dealing with unstructured data stores as well. So for if you're a BI professional or a SQL Server professional or even a business analytics professional, you know, the first two phases of the Cortana Intelligence Suite, information management, big data stores, this deals with what we call in the world of data science features engineering, where you're ingesting that data, you're preparing it, you may do some transformations, you're storing it for downstream analytics purposes. So if you feel that a world of data science is beyond you, it's not, because there's a space in there called features engineering where a lot of the skills that you have already in the SQL Server space can be easily transferred to information management and big data stores. That's not to say you don't have to learn anything. You do have to learn some new things, but I think the transition into the world of data science will be made much easier by entry points here. But we move on to the analytics phase, where we've got the hot topic machine learning, where you're doing the modeling and retraining models and scoring and evaluating them. We've got data lake analytics that sits over a data lake store using USQL to perform analytics. We've got HD Insight, which is our implementation of the Apache Hadoop standards. You've got to bear in mind with HD Insight, as much as it's a base storage layer with Hadoop, there are also different flavors of HD Insight that you can have, such as Spark, Storm, HBase. These deals with very specific areas, so Spark allows you to do analytics over huge volumes of data. Storm allows you to do real-time processing of huge volumes of data, and HBase provides NoSQL solutions. And then we've got streaming analytics that's closely tied into event hubs. So with the streaming data coming through an event hub, it's typically sent to streaming analytics to do what we call complex event processing, but we've made this easier by integrating it with a very familiar T-SQL language. The final phase is what I like to call consumption. This is subdivided into two areas, visualizations and intelligence. So the visualization, we've got Power BI, which enables you to create your dashboards and reports. Cortana can actually hook into Power BI through the data set, so you can use Q&A through Cortana against Power BI. And then we've got the bot framework to provide interaction points and cognitive services for a raft of APIs that we provide to provide a wide range of detection and so forth in various industries. Today, we're going to focus on SQL Data Warehouse, and in this series of videos, we break Azure SQL Data Warehouse into a number of different component parts. So what is Azure SQL Data Warehouse? Well, it's a database, data warehouse as a service. Fundamentally, it takes full advantage of the Azure capabilities that's provided by us here at Microsoft. It's the first elastic cloud data warehouse. We've got enterprise-grade capability, but it can handle small loads right through to massive data storage up to petabyte level, and it can handle queries up to 100 times faster through a combination of technologies that we have under the hood to do it. So what we get is elastic scale and performance. We can scale to petabytes of data. This is done through what we call massively parallel processing. We have the ability to scale the data warehouse in terms of its compute size in seconds, and we can query both relational and non-relational data. And this is all powered by the cloud, which not only has all the inherent benefits of Azure as a managed service, but also its tight integration with other technologies in the Cortana Intelligence Suite, such as machine learning, Power BI, and ADF. And because we've worked with enterprises for decades, a lot of the capabilities that we have are enterprise ready. We've got a simple billing and compute model. A key point of Azure SQL Data Warehouse is that we can pause the compute. That means we only basically start it when we need it, so therefore we only pay for it when we need it. So you've got really interesting scenarios here. First, from a scaling perspective, you might scale to a high level during a full data load, and once that data load's complete, let's say for example if that completed at 3:30 in the morning, you might scale back, but then you might pause it and restart it again at 7 a.m. in the morning. You're not paying for the compute aspect between 3:30 to 7 because you've paused it. So fundamentally, there's a lot of capabilities there that you can get right out of the box. And these capabilities you're actually going to see in this session today. So what is massively parallel processing? Well, it's the notion of a divide and conquer strategy. If you work with data warehouses on premise, you've probably got a server somewhere and it's got the memory configured to a certain level and CPUs and disk storage, and they've probably been configured to the maximum capacity that you planned out your data warehouse would be. Well, these are typical of symmetrical multiple processing systems. So, you know, when you start to hit performance problems there, you know, some people will start to ask, well, do we have enough memory? Or, well, memory's cheap, let's buy some more. Or do we need more CPUs? Do we need to increase the disk storage? So fundamentally, regardless of that, you're still on the same service bus, the same motherboard in order to do that. With massive parallel processing, you're basically taking multiples of those servers and then taking one big problem, like a big query, where it's broken down into little queries, and each little query is executed individually on each of those servers, so to speak. So MPP is very much a team approach of many hands make light work. And under the hood, what it requires is really a method of scheduling those tasks between all the available servers, if you will, that partake in massive parallel processing. There needs to be a communication plan between all that to maximize the transfer of the queries and the data coming back, and a distribution method for the exchange of that data as well. And we'll take a look at that as we go through this slide deck. So the logical overview of Azure SQL Data Warehouse is that at a high level, it's broken down into two layers. Firstly, you've got the storage layer, which is provided by premium Azure Blob Storage. And secondly, we've got the compute layer, which are many finely tuned SQL servers under the hood that's partaking in the work involved. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the key benefit to Azure SQL Data Warehouse is the ability to scale the compute. And we can literally scale up in seconds. So, as I say, if you're doing a data load overnight, you might scale up for the purpose of that data load. And when the data load finishes, you then scale back to a level where the queries can be handled appropriately. You can pause it as well, which effectively means that the compute layer is not there. So you're not paying for that compute layer. Don't get me wrong, you'll pay for the storage layer, but in comparison to the compute, that's really cheap. And when you want to resume operations and access that data, you start the compute up again. So how do distributed queries work? Well, essentially within the compute node, we've basically got two levels of servers in there. We've got a control node. Now the control node is responsible for accepting the requests and breaking down that big query, if you will, into manageable chunks. Basically within the control node, there's an empty shell DB that holds metadata about the configuration of the Azure SQL Data Warehouse From there, it knows which control nodes are dealing with which data, so that when a request comes through, it's able to break that big query, if you will, down into smaller queries and pass it on to the appropriate area. The compute nodes will basically take those smaller requests from the control node, build up in what's called a massive parallel processing execution plan, and then push that down to be executed against the storage nodes. So fundamentally, when a query comes in, the control node will divide that work up across all the available compute nodes, which then pushes it down for processing in the storage node. And then essentially what happens when each individual result is returned back to the control compute nodes, the control node will probably perform a final aggregation of all those individual queries before sending the result back. So from a high-level perspective, it's very straightforward. Just think of it as two-level compute and storage, but the compute level we have a lot of control over from the scalability and the ability to pause and resume. There is geo-redundancy built into these solutions, if you so wish. Effectively, what that means is that the storage is basically, there's a geo-redundant copy of that storage. If anything should happen on your primary Azure SQL data warehouse, you can fire up another compute across the redundant data that you have. Now, the key point of massive parallel processing is parallel loads. Now, we're looking at the architecture we've just seen on previous slides, but on a sideways view. So on the left-hand side, we've got the control node. And in the middle, we've got the compute nodes. In this case, we've got three nodes. So all of these have something called a data movement service. And fundamentally, the control node, as we know, will pass down the smaller queries down to the compute nodes. What the compute nodes will then do is issue the queries and get the storage to process those queries. And what we need really is full parallelism between each of the nodes across each of the Azure storage blob. Now, this just doesn't happen automatically. And one of the things that you'll learn in a later session is that your choice of loading tool is absolutely critical. So fundamentally, there are occasions where you can't take advantage of that parallel load simply because you're using the wrong tool for the job. But bear that in mind at the moment. Keep it at the back of your mind for, I would say, video 3 of this. It is a fully managed platform as a service. Here we've got a screen dump of what it looks like in the portal, but I will give you a demonstration of that. There's a wide range of connectivity options for Azure SQL Data Warehouse, for Windows or Linux, through ODBC, OLADB, JDBC, ADO.NET, and PHP as well. Let's talk about what you should use this for and what you shouldn't use this for. So the target workloads for Azure SQL Data Warehouse are analytical workloads. It's geared up to store large volumes of data. It will deal with small volumes as well. This is why we have the elastic scale of Azure SQL Data Warehouse. Look, the notion of data warehousing is no different to what it was 10 years ago. It is about consolidating disparate data from various sources into a single location. At that point within there, you can shape, model, transform, and aggregate the data. Azure SQL Data Warehouse is geared up to perform query analysis or ad hoc reporting across huge volumes of data. And all this is done using simple SQL constructs. It's like a SQL on SQL. What I mean by that is a lot of the code that you'll see will be T-SQL, but you'll see some variations of that SQL. So maybe there's additional code that's needed for create table statements. When you're using partitioning in Azure SQL Data Warehouse, you don't have to create the function, for example, in order to do it, because the T-SQL required to do partitioning is far simpler. But by and large, you're going to be very comfortable if you use T-SQL with what we've run here as well. If you have a scenario where you need high throughput with high concurrency, transactional consistency of the data is hugely important. There's a large number of singleton selects, then Azure SQL Data Warehouse is not the tool, the service to use. those attributes I just talked about are very common for OLTP, online transactional processing environments. SQL database is geared up exactly for that scenario. So, you know, high concurrency, high transactional consistency, think SQL database. If you've got data that's perhaps in a JSON format, it's going to be more appropriate to think about DocumentDB instead. For other data types that are relatively unstructured, semi-structured, you'll want to consider Data Lake. So, you know, just as important as what scenarios to use as your SQL data warehouse, it's also as important to understand when you shouldn't use it, and hopefully that's cleared that up. So let's create an Azure SQL data warehouse instance. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to log on to the portal. So we're in the portal. We can actually create an instance of Azure SQL data warehouse here. So I'm going to click on new. This will bring up the services blade, which will list the category of services that we have. You can actually type in the first few characters of it and it'll come up, but I know it's in databases, and it's also in, it's here as Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So we're gonna click on Azure SQL Data Warehouse. This is the provisioning blade, as I like to call it. I like to give blades different names. There's nothing formal in that. It's just the way I've come to get used to it. So first of all, we'll define a database name called AdventureWorks DW. The green tick that you see there confirms that that name is valid. We then assign it to a subscription so we know what's being charged against. And then we can store it in a resource group. Now, a resource group is a logical holder of services and Azure objects. And what this gives you the ability to do is manage it and maybe view the billing of a particular resource group against that. Now, in my case, what I'm going to do, I'm going to create new, and I'm going to create one called CTORG. It does support underscores in this case. The source database is one of three choices that we've got. We can either start off with a blank database, which will take the AdventureWorks DW there. We can choose a sample database, which is AdventureWorks DW, or we can restore a backup. Now, we're going to choose sample, and the sample is only AdventureWorks DW here. You can give it a different name if you want up here. And then we're going to store this database in the instantiation of a server object. Now, the way to do that is I can use an existing server that we have, or alternatively, I can create a new server. And in here, I've got to type in the server name, define a server login, define a password, and then choose the location. In this case, we'll leave it as North Europe. There's a really important setting here that says allow Azure services to access this server. So if you've got other services in Azure, that tick will give those other services access to the data warehouse without you needing to configure firewall rules. So what we'll do is we've configured those options, we'll click select. That will then create the server called CTORSQLDW. This is stored in North Europe. Because I've picked a sample database here, I am unable to change the collation, which is the language settings for the database. If I had selected blank, then I'd be able to specify the collation that I require. And finally, at the bottom, we've got performance. Now, this is where you do your scaling. So at the moment, it's set to 400 data warehouse units of DWUs. Now, that equals $5.56 an hour. I can either scale down, or I can scale up to 6,000, and that's $83.47. The great thing is, though, is that we can scale up and down at will. Now, what I do is click on Create. This will take a couple of minutes. So what I'm going to do is minimize this, because another way that you can actually provision an instance of an Azure SQL Data Warehouse server is by using PowerShell. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to open up PowerShell itself, and I am going to open up a script, and this script is called Create Azure DW Server. First of all, I've got a variable here called $SubscriptionID with the subscription ID that I have. What I then do is use add Azure RM account. So the way PowerShell works is kind of a verb noun approach. So it's like add, get, create, and then hyphen whatever the object is. So that's the noun. So from that, we set the Azure RM context using the subscription ID parameter and passing in the subscription ID variable. So it's relatively straightforward, and you do get used to it pretty quickly. Below here is the code for creating resource group. So I've got two variables of resource group name and RG location. So the resource group name is CTO ADS Prep RG and North Europe. And then I'm using the commandlet, as they call them in PowerShell, new Azure RM resource group. We've got a parameter of name using the variable resource group name, location, RG location. And that's basically how it works. So when it comes to create the server, I've got a number of variables here for server name, version, location, server admin, password. Within variables, I can make use of other commandlets. And in this case, I'm using the convert to secure string to protect the server password. And then I've got another variable here for new objects and so forth. Basically, the work is done in this final variable, SQL DB server, where I'm calling the Azure RMC new Azure RM SQL server commandlet and passing in the variable values for resource group name, server name, location, server version, SQL administrator credentials. Now, there are code for updating the firewall rules. Below here, I've got code in PowerShell to create a database. What I'm going to do in this instance is just create the server instance with no database. So in order to do that, I'll run that script. I'm required to authenticate against my instance. So now the authentication has taken place. What you'll see very quickly, it's passing in all that information. It's now logged into my subscription, as you can see there. It's now creating the resource group in North Europe, and that succeeded. And the resource group is called CTO_ADS_prep_RG. And at the moment, it's going through the creation of the Azure SQL Data Warehouse server instance. And that server instance can then be used to actually provision databases within it. Now, this will take approximately a minute. Well, in fact, it just finished. So what we can do now is close the PowerShell script down, go back to our portal. And what we've got here are two very useful areas to look at. We've got all resources, which will show you all the resources within your subscription and resource groups. So let's go to resource groups first, and what you'll see is I created two resource groups. One during the creation of a data warehouse in the portal, and one in the PowerShell script. And there they are, CTORG and CTORADS.prep. Now what I'm going to do is if I click on the resource group for CTORADS.prep, that will give me information about that resource group, and it will actually tell me the objects that reside. And this could be any object. And there you go. This is the Azure SQL Data Warehouse we created through the PowerShell script. This will then bring up a dashboard and an overview of that Azure SQL Data Warehouse. And what this will confirm when the screen refreshes is that we have no database in there. Correct, so we've got no databases. But the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the firewall setting here, And within here, I'm going to enable other Azure services to access this service. And I'm going to add my client IP address, which means that Visual Studio and Management Studio on my laptop can connect up to this instance. Click on OK. Another way we can look at this is to go to All Resources. I've just clicked on All Resources there. And basically, we have the ability to filter by name. So if I type in CTO, what we get here is the CTO SQL DW. Now, this was created in the portal. If you remember, we had the sample database of AdventureWorks, and this should report back one database. So we do have the one database called AdventureWorks. What we're going to do here now is go to the firewall here, and within the firewall you will notice that we've already allowing access to Azure services because we did that as part of the portal. All I need to do is add the client IP address, click on save, and this is typically the first operation you will do once your server is up and running. You will basically set firewall rules to enable access to it. So from this, we'll close the firewall down, and basically we are at the CTO MSFT ADS SQL SRV instance. Let's go back to the slide. So scaling up versus scaling out. Now, for a lot of your on-prem services, when you're kind of hitting performance problems, you know, after you've finally tuned the system as much as you can, of course, and I always recommend before you spend money, you always follow best practice with regards to tuning your SQL servers. If that doesn't work, then you'll consider scaling up. Now, the reality is with an on-prem server, what you've got is essentially one motherboard, a one bucket, this is the equivalent of having a glass. And I want to call out thanks to James Roland Jones and Matt Goswell for inspiring this idea. So think of the motherboard as being a glass, and essentially the resources within the server that are being consumed is like filling it up with water. Well, the thing is, you can chuck loads of straws in it, and this is logical processes that are running within that same box. But the reality of the situation is sometimes, you know, with pressure, you only get one straw. So essentially processing things can take a long time. And the reality is that we have customers that are getting to the point where that symmetrical multi-processing model, they'll exhaust the scale-up capability of that, and they need to move on to a new architecture. And this is where scaling out comes in. And essentially, it's the ultimate team game. So rather than having your mates going on a night out for a few drinks and you get a big pitcher or a jug of beer and you get some straws and stick your straws in and bang your heads while you're trying to drink it, what you'll do is all your friends will get their own glass and you'll share that jug of water out. So fundamentally, they've all got their own glass and their own straw. So once if you have a drinking game and you go, you're going to drink all those glasses a lot quicker than you would do for a full pitcher of beer, for example. So what we've got is that concept is not too dissimilar with massive parallel processing. Rather than having one server doing the work, we have a multitude of finely tuned servers that are basically taking a little bit of the work that needs to be done, working on that little bit of work, and then basically it's coordinated all together as a single result. So the way that we can impact that scale is basically understanding the following keywords: nodes, distributions, and service objectives. Now, when it comes to a node, think of a node as being like a physical server, okay? And then almost think about the distributions as being separate databases. That's the way I think about it. So if you do DW100, you'll always get 60 distributions, the cold, and kind of have this in your mind as being like a database. So you'll always get 60 distributions, it goes without saying. But then if you have one node, all those 60 distributions are stored on that one node. So it's like having 60 databases on a SQL Server instance. But as we scale up, let's say from DW100 to DW200, we can basically split those distributions now across two nodes. So the first 30 might be on node 1, and the second 30 might be on node 2. I think you might get the picture where we're going with this. So a 3-node data warehouse, DW300, is 20, 40, 60. And then, of course, when we add a 4th, we'll break it down into quarters. And then, of course, with a 5th node, we're breaking it down into fifths. So essentially, the more you scale up that data warehouse, the more nodes you introduce, the more that those distributions can be distributed across the separate nodes. And that's the way to look at this. Now, you can view information about the nodes and the distributions and the data warehouse units. Here we've got a dynamic management view called DMP DW nodes, where you can identify the node ID, the type, and the name of each node within your data warehouse. Here we've got a query that will break against the PDW distributions, which will give you a list of distributions against a particular node with the distribution name and position. And then we've got service objective. Now, this is what relates to data warehouse units. Now, the data warehouse units and the DWUs is part of that slider that you saw from 100 to 6,000. So why is it called a service objective? Because if you were to use SQL database that has a similar elastic concept through what we call DTUs, database transaction units. So basically, you'll notice in this query at the bottom, we've got where addition equals data warehouse, where we are specifically calling out the data warehouse addition to give us the service objective. And the service objective is the generic name for data warehouse units, which could also be transferable to data transaction units within SQL database. So that's why it is. So you can use all these queries that you've just seen to give you information about your nodes, your distributions, and your service objectives. This query will tell you the specific data warehouse units that you are using on a particular node where the type is equal to compute. So this will return back the DWUs that you're utilizing. So what are the scaling options? Well, we can scale in the Azure portal, we can scale in T-SQL, we can scale using PowerShell. So I'll show you how to do it in the Azure portal. Basically, there's been slight changes to the portal compared to this. So essentially, we've got the slider that we can move up and down. Alternatively, we can use T-SQL. So use the alter database statement, define your database name, and then within the modify clause, use the service objective parameter, and then specify DW 100, 200, right up to 6,000. So notice the U is missing. We can do it through PowerShell. So the most important parameter here is at the bottom, requested service objective name. Again, notice it's DW100. This is using the set Azure RM SQL database commandlet. There are other parameters you need for the resource group, the server name, and the database name. But also remember that when you're using PowerShell, you have to log in to your subscription. So the commandlets are here that you need to get access to your subscription. And ultimately using select as your RM subscription, passing in the subscription name parameter with either a string literal or, of course, a variable that I showed you in the previous script. So let's show you demo scaling. Now, if I go back into the portal, the first thing to mention is you can only scale at a database level. So at this point in time, with the SQL instance that I created through PowerShell, I've got no database. So I can't scale at a server level. So I'm going to go to the instance that has a database. This will give me the list of databases that I've got. In this case, we created AdventureWorks DW as the sample database. So what I can do here now is go ahead and click on AdventureWorks. This will take up the database blade for AdventureWorks, and you will see a recent change to the portal if you're familiar with this. So what we've now got is, rather than the buttons being at the top here, some of the buttons have moved. So we've now got scale, and this will open up the scale blade, and at the moment we'll get a report of how many data warehouse units that AdventureWorks DW is using. And then what we can do is use the slider to change that data warehouse unit. So in this example, I can scale up. See how it's telling me how many data warehouse units I've used? But I could scale up. Notice how it's purple. Well, that means that change has not been applied. It's blue when the change is applied. So we'll go to DW400 and simply click on save. Notice you get the warning that all executing queries will be stopped. So you'll want to consider doing a graceful exit of queries and transactions before you do this operation. Let's click on yes. It's now scaling the database. So the database has successfully scaled. So we can close out of that. It's now 400 data warehouse units. And we'll leave it at that point. So moving on, pausing and resume. Another key feature of Azure SQL Data Warehouse is the ability to stop and start the service at will. So the way this works is that if you've got a 5 compute node, you've got the 60 distributions done, you click on pause on that database level, basically the compute aspect disappears, but the storage remains, so you're only paying for the storage. You can pause with a portal. There is a pause button that you can click on, and you can resume in the portal by simply clicking on start. You can also use PowerShell with the suspend Azure RM SQL database commandlet. Basically, you have to specify the parameters of resource group name, server name, and database name. And you can resume with resume Azure RM SQL database name using the same parameters. So let's give you a demonstration of this. What I'm going to do is go back into the portal. Within the portal, click on the AdventureWorks database. This will bring up the AdventureWorks blade again, where we previously did the scale, but this time what we'll do is we'll click on pause. And this is done by clicking this button here. We'll click on pause. Are you sure? Click on yes. Bear in mind again, any queries that are issued against the server, any transactions will be disrupted. So again, you need a graceful exit of those transactions and queries. So the pause is completed, and if we were to start it up again, we would just click on the start button. So normally, if you're in one of my in-person training, we do a lab on all of this, and I'd ask you to review these questions afterwards. So please feel free to pause the screen if you want to have a look at those questions. As a summary, what we've covered in this session is we now understand that Azure SQL Data Warehouse is a scaled-out distributed query engine. It decouples its storage from its compute, so we can elastically scale the compute and pause it. It's fully managed as part of Azure. It's completely elastic. It's a platform as a service at petabyte scale. It can integrate and leverage other cloud ecosystem services. and it has a broad range of connectivity options. you can go to learnanalytics.microsoft.com for a list of trainings that are available there, and we have a range of blogs from my good friends Ryan Swanstrom and Buck Woody and myself. Finally, I want to thank you for your time on this session today. I hope it's been very, very useful for you. My name's Chris Tess O'Neill, and if you see me on Twitter and that, feel free to ask questions.